I'm Eric Rosales. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, as fighting in the Middle East enters its seventh day, EWTN sits down with the ambassador of Israel to the Holy See. Hear his take on the situation.
Peace is always, always better than war. Even a cold peace is better than war.
An explosion in Texas sends a giant fireball into the night sky. What went wrong? Plus, a pilgrimage to Italy is following in the footsteps of a soon-to-be saint, the special road they're traveling. And happy anniversary! What makes today so unique for Pope Leo XIV? These stories and much more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you so much for being with us on the feast day of St. Juliana Falconieri, handmaiden of the Holy Eucharist. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump says that he will make a decision in the next 2 weeks whether or not to bomb Iran. He wants to give diplomacy a chance. Now, earlier today, he gathered with his advisors in the Situation Room as he considers his next move. For the very latest, let's go outside and check with White House correspondent Owen Jensen. Owen.
That's right, Eric. Good evening to you. 14 days and counting tonight. Meanwhile, an Iranian strike on an Israeli hospital has further inflamed the conflict, including now a new deadly threat.
Iranian missiles damaged the main hospital in southern Israel. A direct hit. At least 40 people wounded. Officials reporting extensive damage.
Iranians say that there was an Israeli military base nearby.
Where is it? Can you show me? Anywhere in this radius, a military base? There is none.
In response to that hospital attack, Israel's defense minister said today that Iran's supreme leader cannot continue to exist. In addition, other Iranian missiles hit a high-rise apartment building in Tel Aviv and sites in central Israel. In the White House briefing room, Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt addresses reporters.
Based on the fact that there's a substantial chance of negotiations that may or may not take place with Iran in the near future, I will make my decision whether or not to go within the next 2 weeks. That's a quote directly from the president.
As for what comes next,
I can confirm that correspondence has continued. As you know, we were engaged with 6 rounds of negotiations with them in both indirect and direct ways.
Israel, meanwhile, carried out strikes on a heavy water reactor, its latest attack on Iran's nuclear program.
We are committed to destroying the nuclear threat, the threat of a nuclear annihilation against Israel. He gave them the chance to do it through negotiations. They strung him along. You don't string along Donald Trump. He knows the game.
Just yesterday in the Oval Office, President Trump warning once again.
But there's no way that you can allow, whether you have to fight or not, you can allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon because the entire world will blow up. I'm not going to let that happen.
The Arms Control Association says a U.S. strike against Iran would set back global security and encourages diplomacy over war. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Thanks a lot, Owen. Joining us now is Alex Batanka, senior fellow at the Middle East Institute. Alex, thank you so much for joining us. Let's start off with this latest escalation. You know, Iran launching missiles into an Israeli hospital. I mean, what does this say about where this is headed?
Right. So, first and foremost, great to be with you.
Yes.
Look, as you know, this is now seventh day of strikes from both sides. And I think these strikes looks to me like they're going to continue, despite what we heard President Trump say about giving diplomacy a chance for a window of 2 weeks. That doesn't necessarily mean Iran and Israel are going to stop hitting one another. But, you know, it's very clear that watching the Iranian side, they're hoping that they can come to a diplomatic agreement with Washington. The question is that enough for the Israelis? Because we just heard in your segment before, Prime Minister Netanyahu has a problem with Iran's nuclear program, but in fact has a bigger problem. It's the nature of the Islamic Republic, which is what so many folks in the United States have been nervous about, thinking, what does Netanyahu really want? Is it regime change, or does he just want to deal with the nuclear issue? So that's where we are right now.
Now, Alex, does the United States and Israel have the means necessary to back Iran into the corner? And if so, how would the regime respond?
So let me just tell you what the Iranian officials themselves are openly saying. they're saying that if this is a fight between Iran and Israel, game on. But if it's a fight where the United States enters on the side of Israel openly, then they're not so sure. And I mean, they have very good reasons to have doubts about their capacity. The outcome of a conflict, military conflict between U.S. and Iran, it's a foregone conclusion. It's a matter of weeks, maybe months, if we're talking about aerial strikes. But if we're talking about regime change, which might require U.S. boots on the ground, that's right. A whole different ball.
Now, if the Iranians' nuclear capability was neutralized, what's to stop the regime from building it back up?
That's exactly the right question to ask, because it's about intentions. It's not capacities that we're talking about. Iran has plenty of scientists. They can rebuild. So if you finish this round of conflict right now without a change in the mindset of the top leadership in Tehran in terms of the position on two issues, the position of the United States being in the region, something they have fought for since the 1979 revolution, and coming to a realization they have to learn to live with Israel being in the Middle East. If you get those two concessions from the Iranian leadership, they might just have a chance to survive as a political system going forward.
Correct. I mean, we saw what happened in Afghanistan. The United States has the ability to blow things up, but putting it back together, we don't do such a good job with that. And if it does lead to a regime change, what's next for that country?
So that's it. I mean, Eric, look, the United States has never dealt with something this large. And I should just remind everyone, last time Iran was occupied by foreign powers, we have to go to Second World War between 1941 right. and 1945. And it took two superpowers, the Soviet Union and the British, to occupy the place. It's the size of Alaska, of 90 million people, a very complex society in many ways. So the idea of regime change without having a pretty straightforward change in terms of transition from what you have today to something else, if you don't have the plan for that, you just risk creating chaos that everybody in the Middle East right now seems to fear.
Alex Vatanka, thank you so much for your insight. We appreciate it. On Capitol Hill, there is broad support among Republicans and Democrats for Israel's strike on Iran, but there is also fear about the United States getting into a much larger war. Right now, lawmakers have generally been supportive of how President Trump is handling the crisis.
The lingering chance for diplomacy comes from restraint. The president has shown restraint in the past. The president's instincts are good, and I'm hoping the president will not get involved with the war. I think if the United States actively bombs Tehran, the possibility of negotiation goes out the window.
Others add President Trump is acting within his authority.
I think the president right now is acting within his clear Article II powers. So the president's got a lot of important decisions to make. I trust him to do it. He's reoriented our foreign policy. It's much more aligned with, I think, where the American people are.
But some are nervous President Trump could draw the U.S. into the conflict by bombing Iran to prevent it from obtaining a nuclear weapon. Senator Tim Kaine has a resolution seeking to prevent the U.S. from getting involved in a military conflict with Iran without congressional approval.
We shouldn't go to war without a vote of Congress. That's what our troops deserve. They don't deserve to have their lives put at risk when Congress doesn't have the guts to have a debate and vote about war.
I agree. We should have some say-so about it, especially if it involves possible World War III, in which it could.
Senator Tammy Duckworth, an Iraq war veteran, says Congress must weigh in.
The War Powers Act is clear of what he needs to do. He needs to come to Congress if he wants to initiate a war against another nation. Now, that said, I think that Iran needs to be stopped from developing a nuclear weapon.
I really think it's absolutely appropriate to use our capabilities to destroy the nuclear facilities in Iran.
Senate Armed Services Committee Chair Jim Risch is confident President Trump will make the right decisions.
First and foremost, this is not our war. This is Iran's war. The President of the United States is a commander-in-chief of our forces. He listens to all of us that work in the national security lane.
It's important to note that a key provision in the War Powers Act states, in the absence of a declaration of war, the president must notify Congress within 48 hours of military action and limit deployments to 60 or 90 days unless authorizations are passed by Congress. This limitation will prevent prolonged military engagements without congressional approval. As the conflict in the Middle East escalates, Israel has intensified its military operations while facing growing international pressure over the humanitarian crisis. Earlier today, EWTN News foreign correspondent Colin Flynn had the opportunity to sit down with the ambassador of Israel to the Holy See to speak about the situation.
Ambassador Seidman, thank you for doing this interview.
Thank you for having me, Colin.
Looking at the current situation of what's happening between Iran and Israel, with people watching on around the world in fear that this is going to escalate into something like World War III, have you had a chance to meet Pope Leo and speak to him about this yet?
To be honest, no. But I have had a very small interaction with him during his meeting with the diplomatic corps. That was way before the current operation in Iran. What I told him there, I can share with you, is first of all, I welcomed with open arms his commitment to relaunching and engaging in a dialogue with the Jewish people, half of whom, as you know, live in Israel. I invited him to Israel, which is significant for the three Abrahamic religions, in order to relaunch that dialogue in the Holy Land as soon as possible.
What did he say to you in response?
He didn't respond. It was like a very quick handshake, a few words thing. But those were my few words.
When we look at history, there has been such a profound relationship between the Jewish people and the Iranian people. I know that Jews have seek and been given refuge in Iran for centuries, even during World War II, during the Holocaust. Iran was one of the few countries that not only tolerated Jews, but it protected them as well. What is Israel doing today to try and prevent the current conflict escalating even further?
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right. Up until the Islamic Revolution in 1979, Israel and Iran had peaceful, friendly relations. I remember my father, as a child, going on business trips to Tehran. There was absolutely no issue at all. Then, in 1979, a very radical, fundamental regime took place, and it's still in control to this day. It has made it its business to annihilate the state of Israel. But it not only says so and repeatedly over the course of the years, it also built up capacities, nuclear, ballistic, and others, in order to implement it and practice what it preaches.
I know that the late Pope Francis repeatedly called for dialogue. Pope Leo has called for dialogue. Is there any room left for dialogue? Or has that passed, in your view?
Well, first of all, both of them are absolutely right in claiming and stating that dialogue is the preferred way of resolving any disagreement. Dialogue has failed in this case, not just the recent round, but decades, at least from the day I remember myself as a cadet in the foreign ministry in the early 90s, to this day. Round after round of dialogue was held by Iran under false pretenses, manipulated, and resulted not in the decrease of its military nuclear program, but on the contrary, an acceleration of it, to the point where today it is too close for comfort. You know, if we do not eliminate the nuclear program, it will eliminate us. So we had to take action.
What would you say, Ambassador, to people watching this interview now around the world, people of faith and people of goodwill, primarily Catholics on EWTN, who, whatever about the politics and who's right and who's wrong, they watch on their television screens, they look at the images in the newspapers and on social media of the terrible suffering on both sides, in Gaza, in Israel, in Iran now as well. You know, they find it so hard as people of faith to justify the bloodshed and the suffering and the pain. What would you say to them as Israel's representative here to the Holy See?
I could say the following. The Jewish people have returned to their ancestral homeland after 2,000 years of exile. We intend to stay. There is hope for the future. Our hand is stretched out for peace. We want peace. Peace is always, always better than war, even a cold peace. It's better for all.
And by the way, if you'd like to see the full version of the conversation, head on over to EWTN's YouTube channel to see what else the Israeli ambassador had to say about the conflict with Iran and the war in Gaza. And by the way, one last note, we did reach out to the Iranian ambassador to the Holy See for an interview, but EWTN has not heard back. Meanwhile, in Ukraine, smiles and celebrations after more prisoners of war are freed. Ukraine and Russia had another prisoner exchange today. Many of these POWs have spent the last 3 years in captivity. Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin said today that he's open to talks with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. However, he said Zelensky lost his legitimacy as leader of Ukraine after his term expired last year. President Donald Trump has signed an executive order keeping TikTok running in the U.S. for another 90 days. The move gives the Trump administration more time to broker a deal to bring the popular social media platform under American ownership. This is the third time Trump has extended the deadline since taking office back in January. For now, TikTok is still functioning for more than 170 million users in the U.S. Wow. The White House reacts to the Supreme Court ruling that protects young people from transgender ideology. EWTN's Owen Jensen asked the White House press secretary about the 6-3 decision.
The Supreme Court, as you know, has upheld Tennessee's ban on transgender medical procedures for minors, puberty blockers, hormone therapy, etc. The White House reaction to that, please.
That's a huge victory for America's children, and it's obviously something this administration believes strongly in, that young minor children should not be allowed to be subjected to chemical castration and mutilation. The president himself has taken very strong orders, or has signed very strong executive orders on this, and we are grateful for Tennessee's efforts to protect our children, and we are grateful the Supreme Court ruled on the side of the law, but also on the side of protecting America's innocent children.
Well, we still have a lot more to come on EWTN News Nightly, including a nighttime explosion. Why this giant fireball lit up the night sky in Texas.
White Sox! White Sox!
Plus, Pope Leo comes across some spirited White Sox fans. Just wait till you hear how he responded. Welcome back. Summer officially kicks off in the U.S. this week, and its arrival will not go unnoticed as a heat dome is set to bring sweltering temperatures. Wide stretches of states, especially in the Midwest, will be feeling the heat in the coming days. Forecasters predict temperatures will be in the upper 90s, with overnight temperatures only going down to the mid-70s from the Great Lakes all the way to the East Coast. Doctors are advising us all to drink plenty of water, stay indoors as much as possible, and don't forget about your little pets. Earlier this morning, Hurricane Eric made landfall in Oaxaca, Mexico as a Category 3 storm. Take a look at this wind. It brought wind speeds of more than 125 miles an hour. The center of the hurricane is forecast to move inland over southern Mexico throughout the day. Eric will then rapidly weaken over the mountains and dissipate Thursday night or early Friday. Up to 16 inches of rain fell in some places, and as you can see there, many towns were riddled with debris. A massive fireball filled the Texas sky after Elon Musk's SpaceX rocket exploded last night. Musk shared a three-word reaction on X, just a scratch, after the Starship blew up when preparing for a flight test. No injuries were reported, but one day SpaceX hopes to carry humans to the moon and Mars, but so far test flights in May, March, and January have failed. Pope Leo XIV reminds the faithful that the universe can fill us all with wonder. In a message to astronomy students and faculty at the Vatican, the Holy Father especially weighed in on the images from the James Webb Space Telescope. Pope Leo says it's an exciting time to be an astronomer, adding that the Webb Telescope is truly a remarkable instrument and the pictures it sent back fill us with beauty and the mysterious joy. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, an upcoming pilgrimage dedicated to a soon-to-be saint is calling on young men to get ready to climb a mountain. Find out why. Plus, a very special anniversary for Pope Leo XIV. We'll tell you all about it. Welcome back. A pilgrimage to Italy next month is set to follow in the footsteps of a soon-to-be saint. Two Dominican priests in New York, that is, are taking around two dozen young men on a tour of a major sites of the life of Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. They will even climb some of the same mountains as he did. Those joining the group should be ready to walk around 20,000 steps each day. The pilgrimage is set to take place next month, despite the recent change in the date of his canonization. We recently spoke with one of the priests leading the tour.
Well, for more, we turn to one of the leaders of the pilgrimage, Father Vincent Bernhard with the Catholic Center at NYU. Father Vincent, thank you for joining us. First off, remind us again about Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati and how he remains relevant today.
Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati was a young man who grew up in Turin in the early 20th century. He's relevant today because he's a good model for all young Christians, but especially Christians who are seeking hope today, who see a world that's full of chaos and full of strife, and want to keep their faith strong, because that's exactly what he did in his own life. And so that's what makes him relevant, I think, today, and why we're looking forward to his canonization.
Obviously, that would affect a lot of people today, for sure. And there are still a few spots left in this pilgrimage. It's open to men ages 18 to 25. And there is one requirement, though, about physical fitness. Tell us about that.
That's right. You need to be ready to climb a mountain. We're going to climb one of the mountains that soon-to-be Saint Pier Giorgio Frassati climbed himself while we're in the Turin area.
So we mentioned a few of the sites you're going to visit. What are you in particular most excited for?
Climbing the mountain is going to be special, I have to say. Actually going to one of these places that he loved, and I'm excited to share that with these men.
And how do you hope the young men joining the pilgrimage to Italy gain from it? What exactly do you hope they pull out of it at the end of the day?
I hope that they're better friends with Pier Giorgio Frassati and they find in him an example and an ideal for living their faith today and having a strong faith and growing closer to Jesus Christ.
Can you give us a little more sense of, if you're on this pilgrimage, what this is going to look like? How does this work? You know, what are some of the things you're going to do leading up to the climb of that mountain? Or do you just kind of start there?
We're going to be walking in the footsteps of Pier Giorgio. That's, of course, the highlight. But visiting his rooms, praying by the bed he died on, before going down to the canonization itself, it's going to be a very prayerful experience, a very fraternal experience with the other pilgrims. And I hope by the end of the day, just a very holy experience for all of the men involved.
I think very unique as well. Mm-hmm. All right, Father, if people want more information, where they can they go to get it?
You can go look at Select International Tours, and they can help you get signed up for the pilgrimage. Though there's only so much time left for that to be possible, so make sure you do that soon, and they'll get you all ready to go.
All right, sounds like an amazing event and journey. Father Vincent Bernhard, leading a pilgrimage to Italy next month for the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati. Thank you, Father.
Thank you so much.
In just a few days, Religious Freedom Week will begin. It was launched in 2018 by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. The bishops asked that all Catholic faithful to pray, reflect, and act to promote religious freedom. It runs from Sunday, June 22nd through Sunday, June 29th. The USCCB announced this week that the theme this year is Witnesses to Hope. In a statement, the USCCB says through prayer, education, and public action during Religious Freedom Week, the faithful can promote the essential right of religious freedom for Catholics and those of all faiths. Well, we'd like to wish a very happy anniversary to Pope Leo XIV. 43 years ago today, then Father Robert Prevost was ordained a priest. He was 27 years old and already begun his solemn vows in the Augustinian order 5 years before. Vatican Media shared this picture with us today. And once again, happy anniversary, Pope Leo. Less than a week after a mass at Rate Field celebrating Pope Leo XIV, the Holy Father showed off some of his hometown spirit.
White Sox! 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 White Sox!
And by the way, many in Chicago's South Side, I'm sure, are hoping that that will turn around the White Sox current record of 23-50. We want to thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Eric Rosales. Have yourself a wonderful night. Y vaya con Dios.